welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Monday, July 17th, 2017. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my spectacular twin brother, John Abaya.
Hello, and I think you used that before, I think, when we watched the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm not sure. I don't have a list, actually. Do you have a list of like all the things calling me?
No.
Okay, just wondering.
Or I probably said it in a certain way, so it's probably not the same word. I could have said, like, spectacular.
Specular? Oh, like the thing that people wear on their eyes.
That's spectacles, but...
Speckle tool.
How are you, John?
I'm okay. I'm good. Today is Sunday, behind the scenes. And tonight, Ben, you know what tonight is, right?
No, what is tonight? Can you fill us in?
We will get to see the new, brand new season of the hit HBO show Westworld.
Oh, is that that's not tonight? I'm pretty sure
that's not tonight. No, I was told it was tonight. I've been getting a lot of ads of like saying, "Oh, you try HBO free now," and it shows Westworld. So I'm assuming tonight is the Westworld premiere.
It could be if they are in a place called, what is that called, where they live in Game of Thrones?
Oh, Game of Thrones is tonight. I did not know that.
What's if the land they live in? Middle Earth?
Middle Earth or what's that place in Dungeons and Dragons?
Do they live in totally, I don't know. I don't know a lot about fantasy.
Same here. Oh, they live in Hyrule, I heard.
Yeah, Hyrule, yeah.
Yes. So, the games of Hyrule.
The Game of Thrones season 7 premieres tonight, I believe. I think we're going to probably talk about that next week.
Yeah.
But before all that, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impressions of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week. And we conclude with the main discussion. I mean, we conclude the episode with a main discussion. I don't know why I just, you know, totally forgot how to say that. This week's main discussion is the latest, and as some say, the greatest installment or in the Spider-Man franchise, Spider-Man Homecoming. It sounds deja vu, but...
Yeah, didn't we just do that last week? I'm confused. Why are we reviewing this movie we saw last week?
Last week, if people were listening, probably like a handful of you guys, that was a joke impression. We didn't actually watch the film.
Or did we?
Yeah, that's the thing. we talked about before the episode that we were just going to improvise, and because we really wanted to talk about it, but... We didn't have anything lined up. That was a film that we had lined up, but we didn't watch it on time to, you know, give our impressions. So what we did was we kind of like threw everything out there and just kind of guessed what the film was about and like what everyone's roles were.
And judging by the trailers and
the trailer, and strictly just by the trailer, we didn't read anything. We didn't read reviews.
No.
And you and I got almost close to what we were saying.
Yeah, I feel like the last episode is also like a small spoiler if you don't want to get spoiled on something that we made up.
Yeah.
Because not a lot, but some of those things were kind of like almost on the nose.
Yes.
That movie.
Yes. And it's kind of remarkable that you could guess a lot from a trailer and just like from intuition about like how you know the characters and probably the whole MCU of how they are this big machine and how you know how the cogs works and the machines. Mm-hmm.
And then like as we are talking, D23 is happening at Disney right now.
Explain what D23, you've attended one of those.
So D23 is like the Comic-Con or whatever you call that, a convention all devoted to Disney people, all Disney products. It goes from the rides, the parks, to movies, TV shows, and toys and stuff. Like if you go in there, it's all like, it's basically catering to anyone who's like a huge Disney fan and to look forward to the next couple of weeks, or not weeks, sorry, next couple of years of like the things they'll be producing over there in Mickey Mouse House. But I don't know why they call it D23. I think I remember before, but I totally forgot. But I think it was like originally a fan club of, and then grew and grew and grew. And now they get exclusive premiere footage of all the movies coming out, especially, the trailer talk this week that we'll be talking about came out from D23. You want to talk about that?
Yes. So before the episode, we have a teaser trailer talk. I believe it's a teaser from last time I saw it. This week's teaser trailer is A Wrinkle in Time.
Is you the warrior?
I'll try.
You're going to be tested every step of the way.
So that is a clip from the teaser trailer, A Wrinkle in Time. Like John said, it was premiered at D23 with, I believe, all the stars, especially the director, Ava DuVernay, yes. Who's well-known for Selma. Yeah, Selma. Yeah, I thought I said it wrong. Selma and her documentaries and her other indie films, which is not on top of my mind. But for those who don't know, this is a plot synopsis from IMDb. After the disappearance of the scientist's father, three peculiar beings send Meg, her brother, and her friend to space in order to find him. This is an adaptation from a novel to film from the author Madeleine Laguelle, I think that's how you say it. I know she's French. For those who don't know, it's basically this children's story or a novel, like in probably I want to say the 70s or 80s, that was highly popular. And now it's being adapted to the big screen. So once again, this is starring Oprah Winfrey. Why am I saying these wrong? Okay. It is starring Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, Storm Reid, Zach Galifianakis, and Chris Pine. So, John, do you have any like relationship with A Wrinkle in Time? Like, have you read the books or even the graphic novel from Hope Larson? She's a illustrator, graphic novelist. What's your thoughts about the trailer?
So I read the graphic novel a while ago. Honestly, I don't really remember the story that well. I know it's very like whimsical and fantasy and magical. It just feels like a story that should be made into a movie. By judging by the trailer, I know it is about them trying to find the dad. I remember it's a bunch of kids trying to find the dad, and they meet different characters while traveling through time, it looks like. Or not time necessarily, but like space and time. And they there was like a time travel element, I believe. I really forget. But judging by the trailer, it looks really great. I really like how the visuals look really nice. Just especially like the beginning scene. It looks really cool seeing I'm assuming she's the main character, Storm Reid, who plays Meg Murray, I'm believing.
You're right.
Yes, there's like an opening shot I really like when she's in school and she's like holding her necklace, but the way it just pans to her, or not pans, like zooming into her, it just looks like the color's really beautiful. And especially when they meet I don't know what are they? Are they witches? The Mindy Kaling and Oprah and
Reese Witherspoon.
They are
okay. Witches.
I really forgot about the graphic novel. I probably should reread it again just to get the story again. I just really like everything about the trailer, how it looks and how they play a song. I forgot what it's called. A cover song of Starlight Dream? I forgot what was the song that's playing now. do you know what song's playing?
I don't know the song, but I was trying to look for it while you were talking. But yeah, I totally don't remember the song. I know it's a song from the 80s. And
I mean, a lot of trailers do this, where they take a song from the past and make it like mellow tone and like, oh, it makes it more dramatic, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the original song was dramatic. I think the last time they've used that song was in Sucker Punch, the film. Zack Snyder's.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. They used that, too. And that one made more sense because that's about dreams, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm all aboard. I really can't wait to watch it. The little girl who Storm Reid really reminds me of a character in Marvel, Moon Girl, the new girl, the latest hero Moon Girl. She's like she's the smartest character in Marvel right now, and then she just looks like that character so much. I hope she. I mean, this is a side note. I really hope if Marvel. I mean, it is a Disney film, so I hope Marvel is looking. And then if they want to cast a new face to the Marvel thing for the future, you know, of this the MCU. Casting Storm Reid as Moon Girl would be great, and she could be like the new Tony Stark, basically. She could be the Venture and stuff like that, because she is the smartest girl.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. I think, how old is she in the comic books, Moon Girl?
She's probably, I mean, I don't know how old is she in this movie, but they can, you know, take, they don't have to go by the comic book exactly. I mean, she's like a kid in the comic book, but there are no, like, currently in the MCU, there's no kid superheroes that we see.
Spider-Man?
No, but he's, like, a teenager.
Oh, okay, I mean, like an
she's
child,
literally a kid, like a child, in the comic books.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, was that it? Do you have anything else to add? Yeah, I'm on the same boat with you. Visually, it's spellbinding, no pun intended. Well, pun intended, actually. Each shot in the trailer was pleasing to the eyes. The cast is wonderful. I think they depict a very, I mean, I don't want to say like, oh, like the typical like diverse cast, but it is a very diverse cast. And I think translating it to that, to modern times, is done really well. And I think Mrs. DuVernay could do justice with it. She's like an impeccable director. Like, I think there is a certain style she uses in each film she has, and you can see it here. That's very admirable. There's like a certain veracity to it. I love the book from Madeline and Langell. It's inventive, it's imaginative, and it has time traveling. Like, what else? Like, those are three things I'm really into when it comes to films. And just like using those three things and making this really, it looks like a really wonderful Disney tale brought to life. And I can't wait. What's weird about the teaser trailer was that they said that Ava DuVernay is a visual director, which is kind of weird. Like, yeah, I get she is, in a sense of like she has symmetric shots or symmetrically.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm saying it weird. Then she's like these bright colors, but her past films, they're really, really shot really well due to her cinematographer, but she has a really good eye when it comes to, you know, framing things. I don't know. Oh, when people say visionary, they always relate it to like Zack Snyder or Danny Boyle. But I guess you could say she's visionary. Like, I know this film makes it seem like she's visionary. I don't know about Selma. Like, those are really great films because of how grounded they are. Like, they didn't take, like, although like they're grounded in our world, they're visually, they're pleasing and whatnot. But yeah, can't wait. It comes out, I believe, March of next year. Yeah, really great.
That's
cast.
Soon. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Moving on to something more imaginary, you played something this past week. What have you been playing, John?
So I played a new game, a new mobile game that came out maybe a couple of months ago or a week. I forgot, but it came out earlier this year. It's a sequel to a popular game that I discovered 2 years ago, and it was one of my top picks. I believe... I don't know if we recorded it's a sequel to Monument Valley 2, or Monument Valley, called Monument Valley 2. So it's a iOS game. I think it's on Android too. Basically, it's like a puzzle game in which you tap the screen to move your character in this like weird puzzle maze area. The story is kind of like not forgettable, but it's basically a kid trying to find her mother. There are no real words spoken and things. It's all text based, but they're all like in a little like poem or a quote, basically. I don't know how you say that, like a little memory or thing that will just pop up every time you finish the level. And it seems like what I can take from it, it is about that, like a child trying to find the daughter, or the child trying to find the mother, sorry. And then you're in these like really beautiful mazes in which you have to move the scenery, the structure of the area. You only can move certain things one at a time sometimes, but it at times is difficult, but most of the time you can finish it. The only gripe I probably could say about this game is that it's very short. You can probably finish this under 2 hours. So if you want to pay, I believe it was $4 or $3. But to me, that's not that much for a game on your phone, basically. I'll spend that and just, you know, get my 2 hours. I don't always equate this, but it's like, you know, you spend $7 for a movie for 2 hours. Why not play a game for 2 hours that's still very interactive? I don't know how other people feel, but I don't really mind spending that much. Visually, it's one of my favorite things. If you follow me on Twitter, I've been sharing some of the levels I've seen that are really cool and very abstract at times, and I'm just amazed how well crafted and designed this game is. Like, you think one thing can't move, but all of a sudden, or move, but won't make sense, like solving the puzzle, but they do so well that it doesn't skip, it makes sense, the structures and stuff like that. I really want to see how they made this game, because I wonder if they built like an actual prototype, or not prototype, but like a structure to figure out some of these puzzles. Because some of these are like crazy insane the way they look. If you guys are interested, yeah, just it's like I said, it's on iOS right now. I also have like other apps from them. They're from the creators of called Us Two. The words are together, Us Two. They do other apps. One of the other apps I use is Mood Notes. They just don't do games. And then I'm just saying that so, you know, for the listeners, like, oh, okay, this guy knows who are these people and whatnot. But yeah, I want everyone to try this out. Go and check it out on iOS. I believe the first game is out, and I think it's as much as the second game. I haven't seen it. And I think that there's actual DLC for the first game too. So I wonder if there's going to be DLC for the second game.
Yeah, I have this. I have part one of the game, but I've never played it. Downloaded it, but I haven't. I remember you were suggesting it to me, and I downloaded it, and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And then I played like probably 5 minutes of it, and then I didn't put it down just because I didn't like it. Just I didn't have time. Mobile apps, for those listeners who don't know, that I'm very like, I can really use I can't use that time for mobile apps sometimes, because I want something where I can have like a remote control and whatnot. It's hard for me to play on a mobile app. Mm-hmm. Like the last game I probably played was the Tsum-Tsums, Disney's Tsum-Tsums, which is like,
you mean that's an app? You don't mean the little game. Plushie? Oh, okay. Yeah, the last I thought you were just playing with all your Tsum-Tsums.
No,
is that
no.
How you say it?
Tsum-Tsums.
Right.
Yeah. Moving on from something you played, I listened to something which came out a couple of weeks ago, but I just had time to listen to it this past week. What I listened to is Jay-Z's 444.
They ain't look at me the same. I would probably die with all the shame. You did what with who? What good is a menage a trois when you have a soulmate? You risk that for blue? I wasn't a superhero on your face. My heart breaks for the day. I have to explain my mistakes. And the mask goes away. And Santa Claus is fake. And you go online and see. For Blues 2, the Tooth Fairy didn't pay.
That is a track from his album. I believe that track is titled 444. It's a title track. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, it's his 14th studio album and his 13th album solo. So he's been around since probably the early 90s. So since Reasonable Doubt. This came out.
Wait. So why is it called 444? I didn't understand that.
I was going to explain that when I get to it. Oh,
okay. So I thought you were explaining it right now.
No.
Numbers. I was like, none of that makes sense.
But overall, okay. This is his most vulnerable, his most honest. It has, you could literally like listen to his growth, and he shows empathy in each song. I believe this is one of his best albums because of the depths he's willing to take for each song. Like the first song is titled Kill Jay-Z. And it's about killing his persona, Jay-Z, most especially the persona he created in Reasonable Doubt. Like, he doesn't deal cocaine anymore. I don't think he even, like, call women bitches anymore, which is kind of, like, shows his growth in himself. Another song that's noteworthy is Smile. Because his mother is in this track, she actually says a poem in the end, but she's in the track throughout, and they use a Nina, I think it's a Nina Simone, I think I'm mixing up songs probably, but I forgot which who they sample from. I think there's a song called The Story of Jay-Z. They probably use a Nina Simone sample from there. Either way, this song is really great. This actually shows his vulnerability. There's a part of the song where he talks about his cousin being gay and how he accepts that, and that as long as she's honest about herself and like loving with someone with conviction, that he's all for that, which I feel like not a lot of, you know, rappers nowadays or MCs talk about that. I mean, you have like your Macklemore, and then like, you know, Common said this, you know, mentioned it in his track before, but it's kind of cool just to see that growth in rappers, because, you know, it's been a long way since how rappers treat like LGBTQ communities. If you like listen to like, you know, early Eminem and whatnot, it's like using, you know, certain words, you know, it's kind of cool that they grow out of that. So like you mentioned, John, the title track for 4-4. So this is written as in like time, 4 and then colon 44. It is actually time. He explained in an interview that he woke up literally at 4:44 a.m. and wrote this song.
And never mind.
What was it?
The witching hour is 3:33 or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Basically. It probably has a more depth, like there's a more deeper reason to it. But basically, this is his rebuttal to his wife's Beyoncé's Lemonade album. And I think a lot of people thought he was going to use this as like a way to say that he didn't cheat it on Beyoncé. But this is actually him being honest, and then how he was just finding his cathartic, you know, way of him from like being honest about like what he's done wrong and whatnot. And then it's not him dismissing himself that he didn't do it. It's him being saying that he did do it and like the wrongs he's done. And it's really good and it's really well made. Like everything about it, that song, like it brings a new light to him and his, like, you see that growth and that him having kids, he grew. I mean, a lot of people say, a lot of parents say that once you have kids, it adds a lot of growth to you. Like, you see the world differently. I don't know. You could attest to that, John.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure when he, like, had his first child, Blue, and his twins now, like, he sees the world differently. He has to, you know, teach these kids, you know, instill certain values that they have to take that he did before. And I'm like, okay, that's cool that he's no longer teaching what he's done when he was little. And, you know, being, you know, he's fortunate to have this life. And then I think he's doing, what he's doing is correct. Like, you know, like he's not regretting anything. And that's kind of cool. So, yeah, if you're a fan of Jay-Z, and if you're not a fan of Jay-Z, I think this will open your eyes. And you could probably, you know, compare and contrast of him and his old work. Have you listened to the album, John?
I listened to some of it. I haven't, like, most of the time I try to listen to the album at least like 5 times if I have a chance to. Most of the time I just listen to it at work. I really like the, was it the one? The OJ?
Yeah, the story of OJ.
The story of OJ is really good. The one with the mother saying, like,
that's Smile.
Smile. Well, the ones that you mentioned, I really like. Yeah. I just like listening to a couple, I yeah, just listened to it like a couple of times. I wasn't really paying attention most of the times, but yeah, the ones that stand out were those, mostly those tracks.
Yeah, like, and the album's really short. It's, I think it's less than 40 minutes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And I appreciate that because it makes you cut out the fat, I guess you could, or the fillers. Yeah. And like, it's like, and it's a album that is, what do you call that? It has a theme to it. And I appreciate that when musicians have a theme to their albums.
Yep.
Moving on. So speaking of, you know, Jay-Z, he represents the Marcy Projects. He's from Brooklyn, but yeah, speaking of New York, our main discussion, he's from not New York, I mean, he's not from Brooklyn, I believe he's from Queens.
Yes.
So this week's main discussion is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Hey Peter, you coming tonight?
I can't tonight, I got the Stark internship.
What's up guys?
Mr. Stark, here's my report for tonight. I stopped the Grand Theft bicycle.
Hey, could you do me a favor? Hold on to that. Is this anybody's bike?
Oh, I helped this old lady and she bought me a churro. So, that was nice. I just feel like I could be doing more.
Wait a minute. You guys aren't the real Avengers.
So that is the absolutely real clip from the trailer of Spider-Man : Homecoming. like I said last week, it was more of like a joke. We just improvised that, our impressions, and we didn't really watch the film last week, but this week we did. And John, I'm gonna start off with you because you are a huge Spider-Man fan. I believe you have read most of his story arcs.
Not most, like the important ones. Like the probably after 2010.
Okay, but like the most important ones, you know about?
Yeah, know of, or if I know of, but most I began reading like I know of him for a long time, but I started rereading his like actual.
And I think like the Spider-Man animated series brought a lot of the story. Yeah, so you know like about like the, what do you call it? What's that? The multiverse Spider-Man.
Oh, the Ultimate Universe and whatnot.
Yeah. So, John, what's your thoughts about this new film that is co-produced by Sony and Marvel Studios?
I have to say it's probably my favorite of all time in the last 2 years or 10 years. Oh, wait, am I repeating this thing all over again? That almost. Joke?
Okay. But then, in the joke, you said that all Spider-Man films are like your favorite films of the past.
Yes, yes, yes. Not really. probably the two Spider-Man films, and this is one of them. The other one is Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire. But this one is probably my favorite Spider-Man film since the Tobey Maguire Part 2. I have to say it's a really good movie. I'm really surprised. So going into it, I only saw that one trailer that everyone saw that actually like showed everything in the movie almost. It seemed like they showed everything in the movie and the story plot and the beat by beat. But I'm really happy that after watching it, it is more than that. It reminds me, a lot of people throw this around, even Kevin Feige, the head guy at MCU, even said it. It does have elements of like a John Hughes film, but in today's, you know, in today's day, you can't replicate a John Hughes film. I think the closest one is probably Easy A with, what's her name?
Emma Stone.
Yeah, I was about to say Gwen Stacy.
Who's but Gwen Stacy?
Yeah, that's the closest one that, for my knowledge, that I've watched. But this one is close to that. It feels like a teen angst movie of, you know, teenager life, and that's what I've always wanted in the Spider-Man film. I always tell people that Tobey Maguire made a good Peter Parker, and Andrew Garfield made a good Spider-Man, and this one has Tom Holland doing both really great. He captures both the struggle of Peter Parker in, you know, his daily life, trying to keep the secret from his family, or not his family, from Aunt May, who is played by Marissa Tomei. It's kind of insane that she's playing Aunt May. She's like the reverse Doctor Who, or the current Doctor Who. They get
is
younger.
Is that spoilers? Never mind.
What are you talking
about? A spoiler.
Well, Doctor Who, it seems like every actor is getting younger and younger, and they went back to Peter Capaldi. Yeah. Enough about Doctor Who. We're not talking about that. Yes, and all the cast I really like. Michael Keaton plays a great Vulture. He plays that villain so good.
It's like he's done it before, you know.
Yeah, like he'd done it maybe twice, and he lived long enough to see it too.
Yeah.
You could say. All the side characters are his little debate team that he has in the movie that has all like the well-known Spider-Man
You're
characters
talking
in
about
their
Peter
life.
Parker's I was lost. I thought you meant the Vulture had
Oh,
a debate team.
No. Sorry. Yeah, Peter Parker's friends basically in the movie did all great. I was happy how Ned turned out played by Jacob Batalion.
Yeah.
I think that's how you say his name. He did great. There's surprising moments about him.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking anymore about like last week, but a lot of the characters really surprised me of like certain moments that they showed, and yeah, I was like really I just enjoyed everything about it. I took my kids to this film and they really love it. My little one was actually like standing and recreating the scenes, and that might be annoying, but the movie theater we were at had like huge aisles, so and he was in the corner, so he just had his like little own time. You could pick the seats at the movie theater we had, and no one complained because there was other kids doing some similar things, and I just like watching them, and like they get so excited and stuff like that. And my wife really enjoyed it. She had doubt because another Spider-Man film, and I always have to, like take my or take her to watch it with me, and like the couple of times it's just with Andrew Garfield, it felt very repetitive, but this one just, it felt very different. And one last note, I'm happy that Iron Man doesn't play a huge role like they show in the trailer. He plays a minimum amount, probably I say 10 to 15 minutes, and that's it. But he's not Iron Man all the time. He's mostly Tony Stark, and I really like that they it's actually like a Spider-Man film, but like a hint of the MCU everywhere.
Yeah, I'm just going to echo the same sort of excitement and thrilled about the film. I'm going to bring like point out how Jacob Batalion, who plays
Yes.
Ned, Tony Revolori, who plays Flash, Laura Harrier, who plays Liz, and Zendaya, who plays Michelle in the film, how they did a really, really, really wonderful job in playing the debate team and Peter Parker's friends. Yeah, it's kind of cool to see I'm always going to mention this because I'm just really happy to see this like diverse group, work really well together. And like, you know how like people say like representation matters? It matters here because you have, Jacob who played, I mean Ned, who's like a Filipino, and then like you don't rarely see that, like a Filipino guy who takes like almost like a second billing to this film, who's all like, who's really great. I mean, that second billing, probably like third billing next to
You could
Michael
say
Keaton.
his character is very important too in the movie. Like without him, Spider-Man has no one else. Like because we've seen it in the trailer. Like he's what the one person who knows that he's Spider-Man that among
Yeah.
his friends. And you need, unlike the other Spider-Man films, what I don't like, he doesn't have that support. And in this story, he has that support, so he doesn't always have to be, what'd you call it, stressed out about everything. Like
Yeah.
Ned is there for him, and I really like
And
that.
then Laura Harrier's characters, Liz, and Zendaya's character, Michelle, who are basically, they subverted like the love interests. Like although Laura is this really, beautiful senior in high school,
Yes, she plays
she's
it pretty
not
well.
like ditzy or like they didn't
Nope.
do the stereotype. She's in the same debate team. She's loved by everyone, but she also has this compassion towards like Peter Parker. And then like with Zendaya, she plays like the cool, smart but weird girl in school, and like that even subverts the whole tropes or like stereotypes that you could. Usually that role is probably given to a white kid. That's what,
Yes.
yeah, so that's kind of cool. And then like everyone else in there,
Even Tony Revolve's character Flash,
yeah.
that everyone knows that he plays like the bully always for Peter Parker, but they did the reverse here, or not reverse, but because they go to like a very academic school, a very
Yeah.
like
They're all in
gene
the same sort of in the same boat.
yes, that he is not stupid, and he knows what he's talking about too, but he just picks on Peter Parker because he you know, he has that rivalry. He maybe Peter Parker's knows that he's like a know-it-all, basically. Yes. It seems like, and then he doesn't like that.
And then I'm going to reveal who Donald Glover's character is, but he did a good job. He's only there in the minimal scenes, but
yes.
He did a great job. And
he's there for minimal, and he shows back up, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, and he's still in this movie?
It's basically his character from Atlanta, but if he didn't have nothing to do.
Yeah. And he had traveled all the way to Queens to get something.
Yeah. But overall, the film, it's really, really great. I'm really pleased about what what the MCU has brought to this character. I think when we saw him in Civil War, we were excited because it's Spider-Man. But at the same time, they shoe in these characters in Civil War. So you're like, oh, I wonder how they're going to do this. But they did a really great job. And I think giving that role to Michael Keaton as Vulture or Adrian Toomes, really did justice, because we haven't had a villain where we actually empathize with. And then there's certain reveals about this character that makes you even more empathize with. And the last character probably was Loki in the Thor films. And look what that came out. He's now like in probably 10 Marvel films. Or not 10, 5 Marvel films.
No, probably. I was like, that's a lot.
Well, Iron Man. It's the Thor, and then he's guest stars, or he has cameos in both Avengers. So that's pretty that's pretty much 5 films he's in. And I can't wait if Michael Keaton... I could tell, like, this film is going for the less grand... You know, like, they're just really concerned about Queens.
Yep.
And parts of New York.
He's not fighting, what's his name? Oh, the Electro in Times Square.
Yeah.
It's not that type of movie. It is very grounded in a way where you barely see Spider-Man swinging from Manhattan to Queens and like that. He's still kind of learning how to use his powers and what's his area to protect, basically. And that's kind of cool.
We haven't
had that in a while.
And I think John Watts, who directed 2 films, Cop Car, and what was the other film you watched?
Clown,
which are both different genres.
Like, I'd say they're more towards the thriller and horror genre than anything else. But yeah, I was really surprised when how this movie came out. And just the way he actually made the characters feel like real teenagers, and he did a good job in Cop Car, like that. If you go by that, like, he knows how to direct kids or young actors.
Yeah, and then I think, like, my only gripe is just underusing Zendaya's character Michelle, but I think she's there just because they're setting up more story for her next time. But whatever she's on screen, I think every time she's on screen, she's like really pleasing. Like, I don't think you're never like disgruntled about her and not showing up or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
She gives like really good one-liners, and they didn't spoil it all in the trailer, like every one-liner.
Yeah. I also have to mention, I almost teared up when the first scene of this movie, or not even scene, right before the movie, they always play that MCU intro where, you know, and most of the time you always hear the Avengers theme, and this one they use the Spider-Man theme, the actual theme, but
scored by Michael Giacchino.
I was like, wow, this is insane. Like, I never thought I'll see a day where I see this song just play right before a Spider-Man film. And I was so used to like hearing Sam Raimi's, or who did it, Danny Elfman's theme.
Yeah, which I think is more memorable, because I don't think there isn't really a memorable score here except for the original Spider-Man theme.
Yeah. I wish they played that Spider-Man score actually in the movie, but they only played it in the beginning. But still, like, just getting that one little thing and seeing the MCU or the Marvel logo, the new one in which they show all the MCU actors, just great. And they show Spider-Man, actually. I really hope they actually like show that every time they play a Spider-Man movie.
Like, I think we're all in the same boat here, that we highly recommend Spider-Man Homecoming. This is not a joke this time, so
yeah.
Do you have anything else to add?
That's it. I was really surprised about the movie. That's it. Like, really, really surprised about the movie in certain aspects. But yeah,
without spoiling, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene? I really liked the scene of Homecoming. There's literally a scene taking place around Homecoming that really shocked me. That's not a spoiler. I'm not saying like...
Some might say that's probably the best action scene that didn't use action.
Probably, yes.
Like, it's the most tense scene in the
whole
film.
Yes, it's probably the most intense scene I've ever seen in a Spider movie.
Next to probably like the train.
Oh, train scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, in Doc Ock and Spidey,
That one's really good.
Yes.
Where is this at in your ranking of Spider-Man films?
Probably number one, then Spider-Man 2, then Spider-Man 1, then Amazing Spider-Man 2. Surprisingly, everyone's like, what? And then Amazing Spider-Man, and then Spider-Man 3.
I feel like we need to rewatch Spider-Man 3. I feel like we rewatch it. I bet you we'll probably like see the good side of it. Like how we have
you
this...
mean like half the movie?
No, but like, you know how like now we have this like new...
I mean, I could take it as is whatever they were trying to do with Sony and Sam Raimi. I think that the bad thing about Spider-Man 3 is that we know the behind the scenes thing about that movie and how
they pigeonholed.
How certain characters shouldn't be in there, but it feels like they just pigeonholed certain characters, and similar to Amazing Spider-Man 2, it feels exactly the same. But I just like the atmosphere more in that film, or the way they play the character more.
I was gonna say, like with Spider-Man 3, I think we'll find a new respect with it, like how we find newfound respect to like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
I believe that. The Sam Raimi's is the equivalent to the Batman or
Tim Burton's.
Wait, who's Joe Schumacher or
Joel Schumacher?
Did he produce all those films or?
Yeah, he did. He produced. I don't know actually. I don't know if he produced the Tim Burton ones.
Yeah, same here. That's why.
I know he directed the newer ones.
Mm-hmm. And I say like the Amazing Spider-Man are the Christopher Nolan equivalent, and then the new Homecoming
but not
is
as...
Zack Snyder.
But not equivalent. What? Like in the sense of like how.
Maybe flip flop it. Maybe the Homecoming is.
Because you're trying to say
Nolan.
Like, are you talking? About,
I know,
like,
I know,
the
I know.
Dark Knight is the Amazing.
No, no, it's not. That's what I'm joking
probably
about.
Probably tonally
with.
They are.
Yeah, totally. No, it's not. Nothing there. Nothing.
I was
is
like,
totally.
Sam Raimi's is the Christopher Nolan.
Yes.
Amazing.
And Amazing Spider-Man is that. Yeah.
Yeah. Or we could take it to the Superman route, and then that Sam Raimi's is the Richard Donner films.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess.
That's where Sam Raimi
took
inspiration from, is the Richard Donner, the first two Supermans he took inspiration from. Yeah.
So Bryan Singer is a Tim Burton, are you saying?
No, Bryan Singer for Spider-Man is probably... It's probably Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
And then a new one is Zack Snyder's, like... Yeah, okay, never mind. Let's just not... These metaphors are going...
Let's go by the X-Men.
These
Which
metaphors
the
are
Singer
going...
X-Men?
They're tangled in a web now.
It's a tangled web we weave. Or weave, or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, where can they find you in the interweb, John?
You can hang me at the Friendly Neighborhood Twitter account at Abaya Arts, in which I just post pictures of stuff, I guess.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us and the episodes at thefreakingawesome.com. We have a Twitter account, which is TFA Now. That's correct, right?
Yes.
TFA Now. You can follow us on Twitter, which is, we just, you know, retweet some stuff and tweet some stuff.
It's stuff that we like. And it was like, oh, you should check this out.
It's stuff we like and support.
Yeah.
Whether that is socially, entertainment, or you know, whatever. You can find us on Facebook at The Freakin' Awesome. You could contact on email at contacts@thefreakinawesome.com. Please send any recommendations, anything, any questions, anything you want to say to us. We would love everyone's feedback for the handful of you that listen. I don't know. But I think that's it, John. Do you have anything else to add?
No, that should be it.
Okay, cool. Thank you for listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freakin' Awesome Podcast.